you need different people during different stages of your startup, right? At the very beginning days, you need a certain person who comes in and does the day-to-day stuff. And that might be somebody who doesn't have a lot of great HR skills or personnel skills. You just need them to dot I's, cross T's, and make sure the paperwork is done and you're ready to go.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime executive coach and professional recruiter and best-selling author. Let's get into it. So let's get into today's topic of you don't know what you don't know. I've worked with so many leaders who go, 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 and never stop to consider what they don't know and how it may be impacting their leadership, workplace, and company as a whole. I have Dr. Dean Hendrickson, co-founder and CEO of Surgereal Products, and professor at Colorado State University's College of Veterinary Medicine with me to get some insight. Dean, welcome, and thanks for being with me today. Let's start here. Tell our audience a little bit about what you do.
Thanks, Carol, and thanks for inviting me. So I always joke, my day job as an equine surgeon at Colorado State University. I've been here for now for 31 years, so it's been a while. Do that. And then also, probably one of my passions is obviously minimally invasive surgery, but also education. And I think it's been really fun to be able to really dive in and hopefully become a better educator as I've gone through life and learn more things. And so with that, I'm also the CEO, one of the founders of Surgereal Products. And we got frustrated that we didn't have what we needed to teach students how to do surgery. And so we went about making it. And part of this whole concept of what Carol and I are going to discuss today is what I didn't know about starting this whole thing. I got surgery. I understood education. I wasn't a businessman. And so that has been an interesting component to this whole example of life.
Yeah. So that's really great. So today we're going to discuss, as you also kind of mentioned there, and I did in the introduction, how leaders can discover their blind spots and what can happen when we as leaders really aren't aware of our strengths and our weaknesses, right? So let's start here. How do you feel that a leader can assess what they know and what they don't know?
Yeah, I think probably the challenge is, right, you don't know it. So you don't know you don't know it until you get somebody else involved. I think my biggest thing is if I could go back and start the whole business thing over, I would have sat down with some successful business people and said, what don't I know? What are the questions I'm not asking that I should be asking? Mm-hmm. I'd have gone and got some help, some outside influences to say, here, have you thought about this? And I could have said yes or no. And I think it could have made a big difference. I think finding someone who had done a startup would have been really useful. Mm-hmm. We had some people around that were very successful, but successful in businesses that were already moving along. And so I don't think any of us had done a startup. And that, for me, would have been a great place to go. Go find someone who's done this and find out from them what they learned going through that process, as opposed to learning it yourself.
I want to step back and talk about why, because initially you and your partner, co-founder, founded the company, wasn't it back in around 2008, did you tell me?
Yes.
Yeah. And then CSU got involved in it.
Yep.
As a co-owner and put this technology, what did you call it, a technology council or something to help you out?
Yeah. So we have a technology transfer group at CSU.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're currently called Strata. And they found out about us, right? We were planning on building surgical skills models in the BTH, Veterinary Teaching Hospital, and using them for our student. Had no interest, desire, thoughts about making this a bigger thing than that. Mm-hmm. They found us in the back bowels of the hospital. There is an area that was no longer being used due to some remodeling, and we absconded with some space and started doing this.
Yeah,
they came in, said, "Hey, man, this could change the world for training. We're going to stop where we are right now. We're going to patent these things, and then we're going to form a company."
Right.
And that would have been a really, really, really good time for me individually to go find someone outside of CSU who could have really helped me understand what that meant.
Right.
I'm like, okay, fine. If you want to do that, we can do that. I mean, it doesn't change what I'm doing. We're going to make better training models.
Right.
Well, it did make a lot of difference in what I was doing eventually. And that's where I think one of my big first things would have been find someone myself personally that has done a startup, sit down with them, find out what I need to be thinking of, what I need to be knowing before CSU formed a company. I think that would have been a much better time to be engaged in having some help.
And of course, I completely agree with you having worked with startups my whole career. But I'm curious that this Technology Transfer Council didn't have the wherewithal to also say, let's get some advice from people who know about startups. I mean, did they just not know, do you think? Or was there something else that worked there?
I think they also didn't really have a good handle on this.
Sure.
And again, every single person in that group had been a successful person in a business, and many of them coming out of pharma of some sort, and they'd all been successful, right? They'd run divisions, they'd done lots of great things, but it's very, very different,
very different.
It's just not the same to do a startup as it is to continue on a successful company and build it from there. And I think neither of us knew. I don't think they knew. I know I didn't. And I think that was part of our challenge.
Yeah. You know, and we could go into the, you know, what education doesn't know about business.
Yes.
Right. Which I think is a lot. You know, even if they're teaching people MBAs, I'm still not so sure they know what it is to be, you know, you get somebody with an MBA and they don't know what it's like to run a business in the real world. You know, they know what it's like to do it in a book. Right. Yeah. So that real world experience of either having built a startup, worked with startups is so critical to one's company. And you, was it in, remind me, in 2012 when you, or what year was it when you bought CSU out of your business?
Yeah, it's 2012. So starting probably January-ish in 2012, I realized we were going different directions.
Yeah.
I think they were looking more to sell an idea and a company. Mm. I wanted to have a company that made things.
Right.
And so realized, I think we were at odds and we were going different places. And at that point I started finally recognizing, I don't know enough to know what to do here. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm floundering. I feel like we'd gone down a path. I thought things were going good. Then they changed their mind. And I'm like, I need something that does this. And that's when I finally went and found somebody to give me some advice. I went out and got some legal advice. All right, what do I need to do here? What do I need to do there? Mm-hmm. How do I do this? And then I was able to put together a proposal to CSU and say, I want to buy you out.
Right.
And here's what I'm offering. This is, I think, a very generous valuation of a company that's really just something on paper at this point. Here's what I'm offering to buy you out with. And I think they agreed, but I think they did it begrudgingly, thinking, well, that's it. That company's never going to be anything. So therefore, let's just let him go and at least we get something out of it. Hmm. I think it just was that point of that's when I realized I don't know enough to do this.
Yes.
I need some help. I need somebody from the outside that can guide me. And wow, how much better it could have been if I'd have just done that from the beginning.
Well, right. So, you know, that's the teaching moment here, right? Is that, you know, go out and find the stuff and get as much information as you can ahead of time. And don't just assume that Gemini or ChatGPT or some other, you know, AI is going to have all the answers for you, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, when you don't know something, right? And we're talking a lot about that. What do you do as a leader, right? So it finally came upon you. I've got to go out and get some advice. You know, I sought legal advice and so on and so forth. But when you start going to seeking advice, let's say from people who say, oh yeah, I know all about startups and I've done this and I've done that. But how do you really know that person's going to guide you in the right way?
I think that's a hard one, right? I think that that is the other big challenge is do they know? And I think part of the time it's looking at what they've done. It's talking to other people. It's really not that different from everything else in life, right? If you want to know if I'm a good surgeon, you're probably not going to come ask me because I'm probably going to say, I think so.
That's right.
I'm a decent surgeon. But what you're going to do is find people that I've taken care of as a surgeon and ask them if they agree.
That's right.
And then if they do, then you come to me. And that's that's the piece for me is do a little bit of due diligence, ask around. And that's what we've done as we have grown SurgiReal and we've moved into, you know, getting some folks in accounting and different pieces of this is that we've just actually gone and talked to the people that worked there and they've worked for and asked them. And I think that helps me a lot is it gets me information to guide me down the path of, does this person actually know what it is I need to know? I will tell you, once I started down this path of doing something with issue, I had some swings and misses. I took a couple of people that I thought really could help. They were serial entrepreneurs. This seemed like a really good plan. Turned out that they weren't startup company people. They were serial entrepreneurs with a huge bank account that they could do whatever they wanted
That's
with.
Right.
And so that way were very different from me, who had no money and trying to figure out how to get this going. So I, there were some swings and misses in that deal. And that's when I started to learn, talk to people about the people you want to talk to.
Yeah, that's such great advice. And, you know, that's what I would certainly advise as well, right? It's when I, and during the days when I was still headhunting full time, and doing reference checks. And many of those came as blind reference checks, right? Because I know how to find people and so on and so forth and get them to talk to me. You know, I could do a backdoor check on somebody and ask them the questions, you know, because to really determine, is this somebody that I really want to put, you know, put forth to my client?
Yeah.
Right? Can they really do the job? Because a lot of people can talk a good game, right? And, you know, even, I mean, I wouldn't say who this person is here on this podcast, but a venture capitalist that I know who had one successful exit and then became a venture capitalist. That is not uncommon.
Yeah.
And one successful exit does not mean you know what you're doing to advise and invest in other companies.
Yeah.
It's just not. Right? You either have to have multiple. And, you know, your point about serial entrepreneurism, big bank accounts don't mean somebody knows how to run a company, right? People who ran divisions of large companies, I would assert, don't know the first thing about running a startup.
Yeah.
As you discovered.
Yes, so, indeed.
You know, blind spots, again, that, you know, don't know what you don't know what you don't know, or the blind spot. And blind spots unchecked in leaders really can destroy organizations. So can you think of an example, specific example where this happened to you? Not that your organization got destroyed, but something that definitely caused some, you know, timing challenge, timing delays, financial delays, those types of things.
Yeah, I think another piece of that is recognizing that people, you need different people during different stages of your startup, right? At the very beginning days, you need a certain person who comes in and does the day-to-day stuff. And that might be somebody who doesn't have a lot of great HR skills or personnel skills. You just need them to dot I's, cross T's, and make sure the paperwork is done and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
However, as you grow, you have more and more people. And as you have more people, then that becomes more of a challenge, especially if this person isn't able to work with that. And we ran into that. We had a guy that helped us start that was amazing. He dotted I's and crossed T's and did paperwork. And it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, exactly what we needed when we started. The problem was, as we grew, it was harder and harder for him to actually grow with us because it was more difficult to let people have people involved and do things. I have always been a firm believer that I want to hire people that are better at their jobs than I am at mine, because it grows me and I improve. Not everybody lives in that world, and he did not. And that was a real challenge for him, because we hired somebody to help us in sales that was so good. I mean, we really honestly should have never been able to get this person. They deserved a way better job than what we had for them, but they liked what we did. And so we were able to hire them, but because they were so good at what they did, it intimidated the other person. And rather than growing with it, it then became an animosity. And my problem was I saw it coming. I just didn't see it coming soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a deal of, I have always thought I can flex, I can learn, I can help people to work with people. I get people. I understand that. I've had the opportunity. I've worked with people my whole life, large mm-hmm. groups of people,
mm-hmm.
and have learned how to make things work really well. And I just kept thinking I could fix this problem. I couldn't fix the problem. And I think that is the spot I looked at, is it should have, right? Going back, you look at it and say, needed to put an insulator. The person was still doing a great job with mm-hmm. day-to-day dotting I's, crossing T's, making sure all the paperwork was done. Should never have been involved in personnel decisions or direct engagement with the other people, because it just wasn't a good fit.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And it has me thinking about, you know, your two jobs, right? One is a professor and a surgeon, and another is a, you know, co-founder and CEO. Have you found that to be the case, what you just described, in your job as a professor and a surgeon?
You know, I think the cool part about being a clinical person versus mm-hmm. a straight-up professor where it's almost all theory-based
mm-hmm.
is that I not only deal with theory, but I deal with the realities, right?
Yeah.
So I can theoretically talk about a surgical procedure, but then I'm going to go do it. And I think what that has given me is an opportunity to really blend the theory and the reality of things and working through that. I think there's still lots of pieces of the business side of things that are a struggle for me. Mm-hmm. I jokingly say I don't understand sales. I understand the concept, but it's a challenge for me. I love really good salespeople, and we're very fortunate. We've got a couple of really good ones now.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had some that I thought looked really good, but just never could do what we needed to do. And that you look back and go, well, how did we miss on that? And that's my concern. I'm still not sure I learned that.
Well, I mean, part of that is, you know, to your point earlier about hire people that know more about what, you know, than you do.
Yeah.
Right. And yep. I'm a huge advocate of that, which is why I have a team of people doing a lot of work for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to, the brain damage that it would, not only that it would cause me, but how screwed up I would make it. You know,
yeah.
If that's the case, I might as well just be living under a bridge, right?
Yeah.
Because I can't be successful under those circumstances. And, you know, that's what you have to do. It's a matter of finding the right people that can do the job that you can just let them fly, right? And
I think that
and that's
is so
hard to do.
Yeah. But I think that's so critical. That what you mm-hmm. just said for me is what I really resonate with.
Yeah.
Is I don't want to micromanage you.
That's right.
So I have to be careful, because I can't hire somebody that needs micromanagement, because I'm not going to do that, because I don't like it and I'm not good at it.
No.
I am way better at giving you the tools you need and letting you be successful. I laugh when I was hospital director. So I was hospital director here at CSU for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think that is a huge value for me, because I learned a lot about doing both HR, mm-hmm. business, and other things. And that was during this time as we were getting ready to spin this company out. So I was working hand in hand mm-hmm. with running a hospital as well as you know, building or bringing this company out.
Mm-hmm.
We had a chance to hire a hospital administrator. And this person applied, and they were, again, it was a sort of deal. We should never have been able to get them.
Mm-hmm.
They deserved a much bigger deal, but they wanted to be in Fort Collins. And they liked the idea of what we did. So I wanted to hire them. And the dean's office at the time told me, they said, boy, I don't think I would do that. And I said, why? Because she's amazing, right? She's got all these skills. I don't know how long you'll keep her, and on and on. I said, well, I get it for 6 months. That'll help me. I will learn. I will mm-hmm. be a sponge for 6 months. I will mm-hmm. learn everything mm-hmm. I can from this person. Mm-hmm. They're like, what do you mean? I said, look, I want to hire somebody better than me because I want to get better. If I hire somebody that I have to help all the way along, we're both in trouble.
Yes.
And so they were very reluctant to let me do that, but they finally did. It turned out to be one of the most incredible things, because I learned so much. Yeah. She stayed here for, I think, 5-6 years.
Awesome.
It was a great partnership. Mm-hmm. We did some amazing things in the hospital. And you look back and go, hire somebody better at their job than you are, because you will be better at yours at the end.
Yeah. So you said earlier, you know, what inspired you and your co-founder to start building this is because you wanted to make people better, you know, better surgeons. And what I'm wondering about is, tell us a little bit more about what that actually looks like. So what have you developed, and how is it helping not only within the veterinary world, but as you and I, when we initially talked about this, what it's done for human surgeons and nurse practitioners and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So I think the cool part about this is that surgery is surgery. There are some differences in tissues, but really there's a lot more similarities among species than there are differences.
Yeah.
Our thing was the models that we had weren't teaching people good habits. They were teaching people bad habits. Mm. And we wanted something that handled similarly to the tissues we were going to be working with, as opposed to a carpet pad or an orange peel or a banana.
Right.
Because I've done surgery on a lot of species. I've never done one that behaves like an orange peel, banana, or a carpet pad. And so
right.
We wanted something that did that. And what was really cool is that Fausto Bellezza, who was my co-founder in this, we got some money from a donor to start doing something. And we would pour various silicones and then we would cut them, right? We both know a tissue fails to cut. So we would cut it. Yeah, no, that doesn't work. That one's pretty good. That one cuts like it should. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, all right, that's great. That's going to be the skin. And then we did the same thing for muscle and sub-Q and fascia. And then we started suturing. We're like, oh, it feels good to cut, but it doesn't suture. Why doesn't it? And so we worked through some processes, and that's some of our patents that we have, is what you do to make it suture like real tissue. And so I think the cool part for us is that we were the people doing surgery that were testing these, as opposed to lab people who just put stuff together. And that really made a big difference. We never intended to take this on the human side of things, right? That wasn't our plan, wasn't our thought process. That was one of the really valuable things that CSU Ventures did with us, is they brought in some folks from the University of Arizona Medical School to look at this. And we looked at some things, and the guy, we're sitting in the lab table, and the guy's sitting there and he's touching the pads, and he asked for a scalpel and he cuts it, and he just looks at us and says, "How? It's just like the real thing." And I think that was the deal for us. And that's when we realized, well, of course it's going to work for people as well as it does for dogs, cats, and horses. And so, yes, that makes perfect sense. And let's go ahead and do that. And then we've seen that, right? We actually sell more things to the human side than the veterinary side, because there's just so many more programs.
Right.
I mean, there's 100 medical programs for every 10 veterinary programs.
Wow. I did not realize that. Is that just in the U.S.?
Oh, everywhere.
Everywhere worldwide. Okay.
Everywhere worldwide. And there are more physicians than there are veterinarians, because this the way things work. There are more PAs, more NPs. Mm-hmm. And so that is a cool part of what we do. And a huge part of our sales is in physician assistants, because they do a lot of laceration repairs and things like that. And so that they are busy, you know, working on their skills and doing that.
Yeah. You know, as you know, I had a knee replacement exactly 30 days ago as we're recording this. And I guarantee you, my surgeon did not close up my wound.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
He did all the work. Okay.
All the stuff underneath.
But I guarantee you, it was likely his nurse practitioner that closed it. Okay.
Yep.
So, you know, that's just, those they have to know what they're doing, right? So you're, from a sales standpoint, you are selling primarily through direct reach out to educational institutions throughout the United States, right?
Yep.
As well as distributors overseas.
Yep.
Which is really interesting. And that now the medical programs is about 75% of your business.
Mm-hmm.
As I was listening to you describe this, I'm thinking, well, that was another thing that was sitting in a blind spot for you, selling to human programs. Right. Hadn't even thought of it. But, you know, we all have those blind spots.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best news is, you know, can you get them out of a blind spot and into your conscious sooner than later?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you currently have only about 9 employees.
Yep.
And you know what I'm curious about with the amount of growth potential that this has, I mean, worldwide, I have to imagine you as the visionary behind this have to be thinking the same thing is, wow, this is really an almost amount of infinite possibilities to grow this company.
Yeah.
So at this point, what would you say your top priorities for growth are over, let's say, the next 6 to 12 months, and then from that point out, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years and so on?
Yeah. So I think for us, one of the biggest area we're focusing on right now is looking for some new areas. So we've got really amazing penetration in the PA industry, yeah. Right? We do really well there. We're gaining in the NP with that. We actually have pretty good penetration in the veterinary market. The veterinary market's a little interesting in that a lot of people like to make their own stuff in the veterinary world, whereas they don't in the human side. Mm-hmm. What we're thinking is we want to look for other areas. What places are we not thinking of that we could be using? So it's sort of a two-prong technique. Mm-hmm. One of them is continuing to add products to our product line that NPs, PAs, and veterinary need. And then secondly, looking outside for places that aren't traditionally serviced by groups like us that still need training. They do training all the time, and we just need to start figuring out what they need. And so that's been one of the big things. One of our big changes in the last 12 months is every sales call our salespeople do, at the end of the call, they ask them, what do you need that you don't have? Mm-hmm. Or what do you need that isn't very good right now? And so I think that has been a huge thing. And we've actually probably brought 3 or 4 new things to the market in the last 6 months, just based upon that. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're exhibiting at IMSH, which is the largest simulation meeting in the world, awesome. In San Antonio, starting on the weekend. And we've just developed a central line model for people that we're going to roll out there. And we're really excited about that. And then the other piece that somebody came to us recently at a show was, you know, that nobody has any good models for geriatric skin. And it's not the
really
same.
That's really interesting.
Geriatric skin does not handle the same.
No, it's very loose.
As they, you know, the middle-aged person, sure. or young person. Mm-hmm. And so we nailed that, and that will go out with us as well at the IMSH. So 2 new things are coming out this weekend.
That's impressive how you can, you know, really get that in such a short period of time. How are you managing that? I mean, to be able to, you know, come up with 2 things that you're delivering this weekend, but 4 things that you started building within 6 months. How do you get that?
Yeah.
How do you manage that when you're, you know, trying to run a company and, oh, by the way, still doing surgery over in the hospital?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would love to know how I do it as well. I'm not sure I have a good answer for it. Yeah. I think the thing for me is that I'm just so passionate about what I do. It works.
Yeah.
The time that I spend is encouraging to me, not exhausting to me. Yeah. And so working 60, 70 hours a week doing what I love to do doesn't feel like I'm actually working. It's just fun. I was just thinking that yesterday I spent some time at Surgerio, and we are working with my son, who's the head of research and development. And we're working on a couple of little projects that we were doing. And I just love that. And then I got a time to talk to the salespeople before they head off to the IMSH. And we talked about some specifics on things to ask and do and so forth. And then, you know, then I'm consulting on equine surgical cases. I think my fortunate part is I get to do what I love to do on all of those areas. And so it makes it work.
Yeah. You know, that's really interesting. I mean, listen, we've all heard, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. Right. And, you know, and I've known you for a long, long time. You've operated on 2 of my horses over the years. I had a 3rd one that had surgery last spring, and you were so generous with your time over email with me. And as you may remember, I chose to go up to my vet, you know, who has a place up in Longmont, and they do surgery for two reasons. One, it was closer than CSU.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, CSU's gotten really expensive, right? You know, if it were you in your own practice, I might have chosen differently to do that, right? But, yeah. You know, I had a look at all the different circumstances around that and thought, you know, as much as I'd love Dean to do this surgery, I know Hondo's going to do a great job, which he in fact did.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because that's what it makes me think of when you say, you know, the working 60, 70 hours a week is really nothing because I love what I do. And, you know, part of that is the generosity of your time.
Yeah.
You know, which I do want to acknowledge you for, because I'm sure it's not just me that you've been generous with, right? That's just who you are.
Yeah.
Right. So well, I think it's
a cool part, and it's actually why surgery will exist, right? Mm-hmm. I care enough about people to want to give them either the best surgery or the best tools or the best education possible because they all deserve it. And that's our tagline, right? Surgery Rules, because we're all patients, all of us. And for me, I think that has been the most incredible part of my career is that I just have gotten to do all this stuff, engage all these people. I think I will see my 5,000th veterinary student walk across the stage this spring.
5,000.
And it has just been amazing. And when you hear from somebody that writes back to us and tells us a certain model that they use from Surgery Reel made a real difference, you go, you know what? That's why I'm here.
Isn't that wonderful? You know, I've always said that, and you're clearly the same as I, you know, what drives me is the opportunity to make a difference. And I think when people really have that in their mind, it transforms what they do and how they do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got a couple more questions for you. So what would you say right now is your biggest bottleneck to growth?
Penetration, getting market. To the right people to talk to them about what they need. That's probably our biggest bottleneck right now is doing that. We have a great renewals people, you know, 80% of the people that buy from us buy multiple times. And and so it's getting contacts into things. And it's been interesting because as theoretically, it's easier to find people than ever. Everybody's finding people. And so people are more or less likely to respond to an email or a phone call. So our biggest bottleneck is getting the connections to the right people.
I mean, people are far less inclined to respond. I still find that if you know, either if your email outreach is good, or I'm still a huge advocate of using the telephone to reach people. You know, it's being comfortable on the phone and just being really straight with people, right? And so many people don't know the first thing about how to talk to people on the phone, because especially a lot of younger people, because they never had to learn how to do that. Right.
Text and email.
What?
Text and emails. Yeah. That's what they're used to.
So if you had to identify, and this may be the same answer, if you had to identify one thing, if solved, would make the biggest impact in your business growth, what would it be?
I think it would be that. It would be finding the best way to connect with the right people. Once we get to the right people, we can make a huge difference. If we get one of our models in their hands, it's astounding to see how they respond to things. And they kind of get excited. They play with them. They rub them up a little bit. And it's really fun to see that. So I think that's it. I think that if we can solve that, that'll help us make the next deal. So it's for our current people, continuing to build new things, expanded business. That was a real push for us this year. It was the first year we made a real push in our renewals business to actually drive expanded business. And it was amazing. I mean, really astounding.
Land and expand is a very good sales model.
And that has been cool. Yeah. And with that, because we're engaging them, we're asking more, what do you need? So these come into our deal. We keep track of every idea that somebody gives us. And when it shows up multiple times, we go, all right, this is something we need to look into.
Yeah. Dean, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to talk
about? I guess probably the only thing I would say is, It's a bit intimidating to do something like this. I think knowing yourself is important and knowing how big of a risk taker you are. But then secondly, just talk to people. Talk to people, start figuring out who you need to really be having conversations with. I mean, I wish we would have had this conversation 14 years ago. This would have been a really cool one then.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't doing that, and neither were you at that point.
Neither was I, no.
Yeah.
But you look back, and I think my biggest hope for people out there looking to do something like this is, one, do your best to know yourself. How big a risk taker are you? Secondly, know what you know, and assume if you don't know it, you don't know it. Mm-hmm. And get help and talk to people and ask them, where do you see my blind spots are? And make sure that they are the people who can actually answer that, right? As you brought up earlier, if I've been in this business, doesn't make me good at doing a startup anywhere. Mm-hmm. It just helps me in this area. So I actually love talking with students that have ideas. We've had a number of students that are kind of budding entrepreneurs, and I spend probably 10, 15 hours a year talking to different students that have an idea and giving them some thoughts about what I learned and what they hopefully is beneficial to them. So I think that part's neat as well.
Interesting. All right. Well, Dr. Dean Hendrickson, co-founder and CEO of Surgereal Products and professor at CSU's College of Veterinary Medicine. Thanks so much for being with me. This is a really fun conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Carol. It's great to visit with you again.